The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to turn your garden into a smart garden on News Radio 830 WCCO. Smart Gardens, an hour of expert advice and answers to all of your lawn and gardening questions. You can call 989-9226 or text us at 81807. Now, here's Denny Law with this week's Smart Garden.
Yes, it's a little damp this morning, that Smart Garden. We always welcome your lawn and garden questions. However, Mary Meyer is back with us, a faculty member of Horticultural Science at the University of Minnesota Extension. Mary, good morning.
Good morning.
To see you again.
Great to be here.
Now, let's identify your colleague. We do this every time John's with us, but I want his title to be exact.
John, what is your title?
Postdoctoral Research Assistant.
Okay, but we call him the turf guru here. We simplified. He's our turf expert. And here we are, the growing season. And
yes,
lawns are looking, well, I would say pretty good, at least in my case, for a change.
Right. I think we've had a great spring for lawns, for our cool season grasses, right, John?
Pretty much ideal.
Yeah, but yes. Mary and I, John, were talking before, and we seems to be doing it with Julie and with Teresa. I thought, my boxwoods that were well established are done. They're fried.
Yeah, this is such a tough year for the two of our great plants that have died a lot through the winter, boxwoods and burning bush.
And tell me why again.
Well, we think it was the winter before the snow. So all of us have a great memory of the huge snowfall we had. But before the snow in January, we had low temperatures, our typical zone 4, but too cold with no snow cover.
Oh, what a difference.
And what a difference. And so the broadleaf evergreen, the boxwood, took a real hit. And so did burning bush. Burning bush may have been damaged by rabbits. And then rabbits, of course, when it did snow, got up way high. They did huge amounts of damage. But burning bush just seemed to be really vulnerable this year. Hmm. So we've seen 10, 15-year-old burning bushes that are barely alive.
Wow.
And just the winter kill. So it's tough. I keep waiting for my boxwood to come back, and it hasn't done much of anything.
No, not a lot of green there.
No, so those brown parts, I have a boxwood knot, and it's about 20% brown, and I've been looking at it, and it's various shades of brown, but a lot of those brown stems, the leaves and everything is brown, and the whole stem all the way down to the ground is dead in the middle. So you can cut out some of the brown, and then we just have to evaluate whether or not we need to replace it. But I'm still going to wait a couple more weeks. July 15th is my cutoff date for pruning that boxwood. So I usually prune it right about now.
I like the term, the cutoff date.
the cutoff date. So this is because you want that any new growth that's rejuvenated by pruning, you want that to harden before winter. So between now and the next month, and I'll be in again. I will let everyone know when prune that boxwood and make a decision. But I'm surprised how little it's growing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll follow your lead. Do the same thing.
It's unfortunate, but
really
that's the perils of Minnesota gardening.
Yep. By the way, if you have a lawn or garden question, now's your chance because Mary and John in studio answering your questions, either by phone or by text. We cleared the lines now, and we're ready for your questions. 651-989-9226 or send us a text, 81807. And you know we tend to get busy on this show, so don't wait. We want to get as many questions as we can answer, both phone and text this morning. I want to ask John a question, Mary, about what could or should we be doing to our lawns now, if anything, as far as fertilizing, weed and feed, stuff like that?
So right now is probably most of the lawn maintenance that we'd be recommending is just general good cultural practices, best management practices. And that includes for things like lawn mowing, making sure that you're recycling or mulching or returning the clippings to the lawn area that you're doing. Do not collect them and bag them and try to compost them offsite. Also, just make sure that you're mowing as the grass needs it. So where you're ideally not removing any more than 1/3 of the leaf surface at a time when you're mowing. And for most people, that ends up being every week to 10 days or so. But and also as far as mowing height, The higher the better, and generally speaking, up until 4 to 5 inches or so, but at least 3 inches, but try to get the higher the better.
Now, I'm thinking, not that it's ever happened to me, but I'm thinking with the grass is longer than really it should be. Maybe I was on vacation or whatever, and I cut it, but don't bag it, and then it's left on the lawn, and it's kind of clumpy. Is that that's not necessarily good, is it? Or does that hurt the lawn?
Yeah, some people have like a no-mow fine fescue lawn is one of the ones that we call them. And that's just kind of like a feathered look. It's like a no-mow area that is really only mowed once or twice a year. And a lot of times if they do have that lawn type, you would when you do clip, when you do mow, you would have an excessive amount of clippings on the surface, and that would actually harm the grass there that's growing there. So if you have if there is an excessive amount of clippings, in that case, you would need to
bag, at least in that one particular cut. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's see. Jim is calling from Spring Lake Park. Jim, what's your question?
Yeah, my neighbor has Creeping Charlie in his backyard and is trying to go through my chain link fence. What can I do to get rid of it?
All right. We have our first Creeping Charlie question today.
First of many, probably.
First of many. Yeah,
so Creeping Charlie is by far one of the most problematic weeds in the area, as I'm sure you've experienced. I think there's two schools of thought here. One is understanding why the Creeping Charlie is there. It's coming from your neighbor, of course, but it might also be because of excessive shade and things like that. But Creeping Charlie will get in pretty much everywhere. It doesn't really matter if you have a dense lawn or not. But so there's really only one chemical option that's effective on Creeping Charlie. That's a selective herbicide, and it's triclopyr. It's triclopyr. Is the name of the active ingredient, and it can be found in a number of products that are sold in consumer stores like big box stores and things like that, lawn and garden centers. So triclopyr is the active ingredient. It would take a couple of different applications of sequential applications spread about 2 to 3 weeks apart, and then you could remove that. But that's going to be an uphill battle for you, unfortunately.
Yeah, it really is. Is there a time of year that's best to treat Creeping Charlie?
Yeah, that's a great question. The fall is ideal because that's when the cool season grasses that were growing in this area, they're most competitive at that time, and the Creeping Charlie is starting to slow down its growth. So so you can fill in with your lawn at the same time as you're removing the Creeping Charlie. But you could do it right now. I would just avoid spraying that chemical anytime it's above 85 degrees.
Oh, okay. Good thought. Let's go back to the phones. Richard is calling from Brooklyn Center with a question. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
What is the best time to trim a Crimson King maple tree, and what is the cutoff date?
You can prune a maple tree right now. The cutoff date for a lot of our deciduous plants is mid-July, so that's July 15th. Prune it before that time so that the new growth isn't injured going through the winter. Having said that, maple, a lot of our arborists and so on do pruning in the winter when the plants are completely dormant. That's the safest time to prune oaks and ash, the two trees that we have issues with pests problems. So in the dead of the winter is fine for the Crimson King Norway maple. You can do that pruning right now. That's a pretty vigorous tree that has that really dense shade. So you could do pruning right now.
Okay. Texter, by the way, if you have a lawn or garden question you want to send via text, 81807, or call us, 651-989-9226. Texter says, when I see a little growth at the base of the burning bushes, maybe if we take them down low, might they come back?
Yes, that's true. They might come back. It really depends on how much kill there is in that entire plant. When I saw the small amount, relatively speaking, of the damage on my boxwood, I thought, oh, this is going to be okay. It's going to grow out of it. But the growing out of it is so slow, it's hard for us to tell how much of the whole root system was damaged as well. So, yes, that's certainly an option. The top is dead. You can cut it down to where it's alive. If it's strong enough, it might come back.
Okay. Yep. Another text says, do little lime hydrangeas tend to bloom later in the summer?
Yes, they haven't bloomed yet. So we're getting the soon past our spring bloomers and into the summer bloomers. And that's when the hydrangea arborescens, little lime, will start blooming. So that's a summer bloomer. Yes, it comes a little bit later.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Just if you're just joining us now, Mary Meyer and John Trappi in from the University of Minnesota Extension to help. We're talking lawns and gardens as we do every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. A lot of help in studio. Take advantage of it. Call us or text us, and we'll get back to both. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO Radio. We have one line open if you have a lawn or garden question, 651-989-9226. In the meantime, you can send a text, 818-087. Mary Meyer, John Trappi in from the University of Minnesota. As I said earlier, we got a lot of help, a lot of brain power here in the studio, so take advantage of it. Boy, we've got a lot of texts and phone calls, so let's get to it. I want to ask you about the Arboretum, too, as yes. we move through the rest of the day here. We did this. Is it too late, texter says, to start a vegetable straw bale garden?
No, I would go ahead and do that.
Okay.
Yes. You could put some short season things like zucchini, maybe try green beans in that. Soil is number one for growing your plants, but if you want to try the bale gardening, it's a fun way to try that too. You have to be careful with nutrient availability and then supplying quite a bit of water and always full sun.
Always full sun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go to Bob, who's calling from Downing, Wisconsin, I believe, with a question. Go ahead, Bob. You're on CCO.
Thanks for taking my call. I got a bleeding heart. Somebody told me I could cut that back after it flowers and it'll come back again. I was wondering how far back I'd have to cut that.
So I wouldn't worry at all about cutting back your bleeding heart. It will naturally die. It might be starting to turn a little bit yellow already. It will naturally die, and the whole thing is going to look like it's dead, but it will come back again next year. It's a good perennial for us, and they look nice this spring with the cooler weather conditions. So don't worry about cutting it because it's storing food for next year, so it'll come back from the root.
Okay. Let's go to Mankato. I believe Nate is waiting there with a question. Nate, you're on CCO.
Yes, a very good morning to you. I was sitting out on the deck this morning, and I noticed a tree. Half of it's changing colors already. It's almost got red leaves or whatever. I called you a year ago, and I had the same issue. We've had a lot of water down here, and some of the trees did stand in water for a period of time. Okay, I lost the trees I referred to a year ago, you know, the same situation was going on. My question is, if you remove the half of the tree that, you know, where you see discoloration, half of it has good color, the other half is discolored, will that save the tree, or is it basically on death row?
I don't think I would do any pruning on that, Nate, because even though the leaves are red, they still have the ability to produce some carbohydrates, photosynthesis for the tree. So you'd just be cutting off some of the food reserves if you took off what was discoloring or early fall coloration now. That does, it is a sign of stress for the tree. My guess is these are maples. Maples tend to do that. Maples are one of our trees that will tolerate a lot of water or more water-saturated soils. So, at this point, I'm really not sure what to tell you. I guess I'd go first for a positive identification of what are those trees and consider replanting trees that have a really good tolerance to soil moisture, like our larch, a native larch, which really grows in the swamps.
Okay. Let's talk to Dolly. Dolly has a question here on CCO. Good morning, Dolly.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Up until a year ago, I had some beautiful phlox in my flower garden, and they started to turn, like drying up from the ground on up. And now this year, when they're coming up again, but they're starting to turn kind of yellow again, and I'm wondering if there's something, you know, some kind of a bug or something in there that I need to take care of.
Good question, Dolly. Phlox is one of our really tough garden perennials, and I'm not sure what's wrong with yours. If I were you, I would dig around and see if you can find anything in the ground that's tunneling there or eating the root system. Maybe mice or voles or something are living in there. But otherwise, I would make sure that it has enough water. There are some insects, but boy, not very many. More mildew problems with phlox than anything else. The other thing you could do is take a couple pictures of it, and you can send those pictures in to Ask an Expert. That's a link on our extension.umn.edu page. Just click on Garden and then Ask an Expert, the link that's there.
Yeah, let's mention that website again. That's such a great resource.
Yes, extension.umn.edu and Garden. We also have our Yard and Garden newsletter, which you can get on a regular basis. You can sign up to get that in your email. It's once or twice a month throughout the year with lots of garden tips. We've got the 10 tips now for lawn care that's on there. We have what to do about mosquitoes and gnats that we're all fighting. And we have an article about, plastic pots. What to do with recycling your plastic pots from the garden. That's our
We just article. Had another text about that very thing. So
yes,
check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
All right, very good. I'll tell you what we need to do. We need to take a break and have a look at that forecast, too. Call in your lawn or garden question at 651-989-9226 or send a text 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to CCO Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here in the studio helping you out. Mary Meyer and John Traffy. We're talking again lawns and gardens. So give us a call or send a text like about a million people have done, as a matter of fact. Yes. I tell you what, let's see how many folks we can help out here. Sandy, I believe, is first up. Sandy, what is your question for?
My question is on what time to go ahead and pick the vegetables. I understand that it's best to pick corn in the morning and green beans in the evening for their sugar content. I'm curious about potatoes, sweet potatoes, tomatoes, and sweet peppers.
I never heard of that before.
Yes. Early in the morning actually is good to pick a lot of vegetables. The peak of the day, there's a lot of heat in the vegetables. You have to cool those down quickly and take them out of the garden to get them cool. So when conditions, first of all, when they're ripe, and then number two, when conditions are cool is a good rule of thumb. But potatoes, sweet potatoes, those sweet potatoes will take our whole growing season. Unless you want something that's really small, they need 140 days. So that's the whole growing season for us. So those are Irish or white potatoes are a little bit shorter and vary. So if you still have the information that came with the plant, the tag or the seed packet, that tells you the days to harvest with different crops, and that's a good guideline. But cool time of day.
Okay.
It's a good rule of thumb.
Interesting. Texter wants to know, can I prune all of my bushes after they flower?
Well, that's kind of a good rule of thumb. But, you can kind of, especially if flowers are your main criteria for a lot of us, that is true. So with lilacs, big common lilacs have finished flowering, so prune them when they're done. Weigelia is going to finish in a little while. Hydrangeas, you can do that. The only issue is getting into the close to the winter. Pruning encourages growth, so you don't want that new growth to get winter injury.
Very good. Jim is calling from Andover with a question. Jim, you're on CCO.
Hello, Mary and John. I have a question. I'm in the landscape business. So I travel around yard to yard, and this week I've seen probably six different lawns where it looks like drought stress. At first I thought it might be chemical damage, but there were large areas, 6, 8, 10, 12 feet across, and wondering, do you have any idea what that may be?
Yeah, if you're seeing drought stress right now, it could potentially be white grubs. But they're almost to their adult stage where we're going to start finding those Japanese beetle, mass chafer adults around. But if it's an area that looks like drought stress and it's not responding to the rainfall that we've had, then that would be my first guess. What you could do is you could go up and actually try to pull on it, and if it feels like the plants themselves are healthy, but they just come up without any roots, that's there's probably a really good indication that it is either grubs or another insect feeding on it. And you can either just use like a shovel and try to pull back the sod a little bit, and you should probably be able to find some white grubs or the pest itself. Another thing you could do is just a soapy mix up a jug of soapy water and pour it over the area, and if there are any type of larvae from like sod webworms or army worms that also can cause some of these symptoms, they would all come to the surface from that soapy water solution. And that's a good scouting tip there. For
Interesting. A texter says, my Merrill magnolia did not blossom this year and has had fewer blooms in the past 2 years. The leaves are small and curled this year. Two branches have very few leaves, almost no leaves. Anything we can do to bring it back?
I think you should examine this tree to make sure, or shrub, that makes sure you don't have magnolia scale.
Mm.
So that's a severe insect problem that's been quite prevalent in the last few years in our area. The scales live all along the bark, and they have a hard shell on them. You can also look up magnolia scale on our extension.umn.edu website and get pictures and see what that looks like. So my guess would be it's got magnolia scale, or it might have had winter injury. And there again, that would cause a lot of dieback to the plant itself. So you can cut back whatever is dead on it, but really examine it for magnolia scale.
Okay. Here's a question. See what you both think of this. Is a clover lawn practical in Minnesota?
I think so. Yes.
You like clover?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I think that's going to end up becoming more and more popular as we figure out how to actually grow and maintain those two plants together. One of the issues with the clover species is that they're not very shade tolerant. So. A lot of times what ends up happening is they either outcompete the grass or they are outcompeted by the grass. If you do, your best bet by doing so would, if you did want to have a clover lawn, clover and grass lawn, is by using some of the fine fescues, specifically the hard fescue, would be best to try to get those two to grow together.
Hmm. All right. Bees love it, don't they?
Bees love it. It's just starting to flower now in my lawn. And you can buy clover seed at a lot of garden centers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jerry is calling from Hudson, I believe. Jerry, you're on CCO.
Good morning. My question is, I have an area in front of my house which is exposed in the wintertime, and I have iris, peonies, and several other plants that have been there probably about 22 years. And this year, my tulips, a handful of tulips, I saw buds and they did not open up into blooms. My daffodils didn't bloom at all. And my peonies that were beautiful for years have slowly declined. And I only have a few blossoms on the peonies now. I'm not real good about fertilizing. I'm kind of haphazard about that. So I don't know if it's just a tough winter for everything or if I'm really under fertilizing or something else is going on.
Well, yes, Jerry, it could be a combination of things. One of the keys that you mentioned is that exposure. Your garden is exposed, so maybe it's the south side. So that's the roughest conditions for our winter, and that's where if we don't have snow cover and protection, the frost can go further. The freeze-thaw cycle is more extreme, so it's a rougher time for plants, even the hardy ones like the iris and peony that you described. So they may live for a few years, but then gradually decline. And we had severe losses from the winter this past January. Even our tough hardy plants on the northern protected sides of homes were damaged severely. So I think you've got the right mix of things, but it's just what might happen on the south side of your house. The tulips and daffodils, tulips especially, decline over time. So I would consider replanting the tulips and daffodils. Every 3 or 4 years, you'll probably need to replant those. But iris and peony, those are good bets, but they could have just reached the end of their time.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Tom in New Hope has a question, I believe. Tom, what is your question?
Yes, I've got an answer for the creeping Charlie. My wife planted hosta all around the edging of our lawn many years ago. I added a river rock about 1 foot to 15 inches from the neighbor. And this acted as a barrier, and then it's easier to see it coming in. And good fertilizer on your grass will help your grass grow stronger, and you can actually kill it before it gets in. Like a moat.
Like a moat. Like a moat. I like that. Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, good ideas. Yes.
Very
so
good.
So the hosta and then the rock and then, yeah.
Good
Make
deal.
Your own barrier.
We have smart listeners for sure. Here's a text that says, my rhododendron full of buds, but obviously not going to bloom. My azalea is done. Should I trim them both now? They're huge and needed. And will the rhododendron get blooms on for next year? Couple of questions.
Hopefully it will. Yes, this is the right time to do the pruning on those. We saw some beautiful azaleas. Here it is, the winter that killed a lot of other things, and the azaleas just came through beautifully this year. So really amazing. But the rhododendron, gosh, I would just make sure that that's well watered and as we go in now through the fall and everything, and hopefully it will make enough food reserves to bloom again next year.
All right. Here's a text that says, can rhubarb plants that are infected with, is it Rumelaria leaf spot, be harvested? Should the stalks all be removed from the plant now?
So if you have leaf spot on your rhubarb, right, pruning that out, removal of the diseased portion of it is a good idea. You know, you can eat that. It's not the fungal diseases on plants are totally different than what would affect us as humans. Most people cook rhubarb, and that will take care of any killing any organism that's in there. But pruning out what is disease and where those spots are is a good idea. Diseased plants are best disposed of in the municipal compost sites where it gets really, really hot.
Okay. Texter said, planted 20 new perennials such as asters, coneflowers, and astilbe. How can I protect them from rabbits? Also, how frequently should I water the new plants?
So the only way to protect them I know of is really a barrier, a fence around that area. There are some repellents that you can put out. You have to put those out regularly for rabbits. Rabbits aren't affected so much by odor. They are by taste, but not so much by odor. So there are some pepper repellents, sprays and things that you can put on. But the most effective one really is a fence. And then the watering, you know, if it's not raining once a week, I would say every 10 days you should be watering the new plants, mostly just this summer. Hopefully they'll establish, and then next summer you won't need to do much watering.
Okay. Well, I think we have another rabbit question from Chris in Bloomington. Hey, Chris, what is your question?
Well, hello, guys. I built some raised beds. They're 36 inches tall. Is that high enough where I don't have to put a fence? Or do those buggers jump even higher than that?
No, I think 36 inches is enough for a rabbit, as long as there's no way that they can crawl up the side or any little ledge that they can get onto. 36 inches is probably high enough for the rabbit.
Okay. Tell you what, let's do. Let's take a quick break here. Invite our listeners to hang around. We have more callers. We have texters, more questions to answer here on our Smart Garden Show on CCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to CCO Smart Garden Show. Denny Long in studio with Mary Meyer and John Trappi from the University of Minnesota Extension. Now, we've got callers and we have texters. Let's do this. These folks have been waiting for a while to get on. Alan in St. Paul is next on the phone. Alan, go ahead with your question, please.
Good morning. I have phlox, lilies, and hostas, and they're doing very well this year. But now I have deer munching on the top of those plants. Will those plants bloom? And how can I discourage the deer from dining on these plants?
Your phlox and hosta might still bloom, but the lilies probably will not. They don't usually have auxiliary buds or side shoots once the top gets taken off. Well, deer are affected by smell. They don't like the smell of garlic and pepper and humans and certain soaps. But again, the best thing is a barrier. This morning at 7:15, I saw a deer in front of my house on the street in the 75 neighborhood home that I live in. Their deer are everywhere.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and they're not.
So just the physical barrier you can try. They don't like to step in things. You can put lie down some tomato cages around your plants. They don't like to get their legs caught in things. But, you know, they can lean over. And so it's tough, Alan. It's a big issue.
Really is. All right, let's grab a call and then we'll get back to the text. Marcia is calling from Bloomington. Hi, Marcia. What's your question?
Hi, I have Alba shrub rose that's about 6 feet to 8 feet tall, and the foliage is just beautiful, and it has lots of flowers, and the shoots are about a pop bottle size round. But whenever we get a high wind or a heavy rain, the rain just knocks it right flat. The branches just curl over, and they never come back. And right now I have it I'm supporting it with a bunch of strips of sheet. And I've only fertilized it with rose food once this year. I usually forget to do that. But this is a perennial problem that the new branches are so pliable and so weak that they fall over and they never come back up. Do you have any suggestions?
I think you're going to have to figure out some type of staking for this. So whether you use green garden stakes from the lawn garden store or bamboo stakes or some other type of structure, even a couple of tomato cages or some type of hardware cloth, I would figure out a earlier so that the plant can grow up around it. Early in the spring, put on some type of staking. Then it will hopefully grow up around that, and that will still help to support it. So It's wonderful to have a big rose like that with so many blooms on it. Yeah, it's very healthy. It's in a great location, but it's just growing too much too quickly to support the weight of it.
You know, we were talking off air about the arboretum, and my son and I were practicing some photography techniques at 2 or 3 Sundays ago, and it was so much fun doing that. And I hadn't been there for a while. But there were so many people there at the time, and all these different languages were being heard, spoken
yes.
there. What a neat place that is.
It's the best. The Arboretum right now is just fantastic. So the peonies are about to peak. The peonies on the peony walk are just outstanding. The iris are peaking now. And we have the You Betcha Castle. The You Betcha Castle is so much fun. I think it's much more when you're inside than when you see it from afar. So it's 5 towers with 5 labyrinths on the inside that you can hide in, practice your photography,
yes.
play with your children or your grandchildren. So, and in addition to the plants, the You Betcha Palace is there. The botanical illustrations are fantastic from garden centers and botanic gardens all over the world. People are coming just to see that botanical illustration exhibit. But what a fantastic place to visit.
And right. to get there is what easy?
Pretty west easy. Of the city, it's just past the intersection of 41 and 5. And look at the website for the hours. Basically, the hours are 8 to 8. So beautiful place to walk around, get some exercise, and look at the wonderful plants we have in Minnesota.
Absolutely. All right, let's go back to see how many text messages we can answer before you both leave us today. If you prune your maples, what do you put on the end of the cut?
You don't need to put anything on there. The plant will make its own healing and will partition that off. So you don't need to do any wound painting, we used to call that.
You mentioned peonies. Texter says, can I dig a piece of my peony from the outside of the plant, share with a friend, or do I need to dig up the whole plant and divide it? I'm hoping that doing it this way will not affect the blooms on my plant.
You can do this, and you will not get the whole plant because that peony root system is like a tree. They have a gigantic, big, mammoth root system. So you'll only get part of it, even if you want to get the whole thing. And you should do that in the fall. So wait till it's starting to die down in the fall and do it then.
Okay. Texter wants to know, does asparagus have a lifespan? We have had many good years with ours, but this year we only got a few stalks. New stalks are puny and few. We are letting it rest, they say.
It kind of does. I mean, it's a long-lived perennial, so you can get 20 years out of it easily. But it responds well to manure and fertilizer. And if it's getting shadier, if the trees are growing around it, that will really reduce it. But commercial growers don't use a field forever. They're always rejuvenating asparagus beds.
This might be a suggestion for the website. Texter says, I'm looking for some shrubs to fill in where my pink honeysuckle bushes have gotten too scraggly. I like bridal wreath so far. Any suggestions? There's another shrub bigger with white flowers. What that might be? Well, maybe they could do some probably, identification.
Maybe viburnum is your other shrub. But the bridal wreath spirea is good. I love the native viburnums. A lot of the consideration really is height. How big a shrub do you want there? Is it sunny? Is it shady? What type of soil and so on? So, yes, we have a wonderful plant finder. Julie Weisenhorn has worked on that. If you go to extension.umn.edu, click on garden and then landscape plants, you'll find that the plant finder there. But viburnums are wonderful. So are dogwoods. We have many great native shrubs that you can plant.
All right. Texter says this. And, John, maybe you can help me with this. I believe I have, Texter says, yarrow in my lawn. I mow and, never have seen it flower, but it still seems to spread. What are the best control measures for that?
Well, first of all, the best control measure is a dense, healthy turf to prevent it from coming back next year. So one thing that most broadleaf herbicides would control that, I think yarrow is going to be is nearing the end of its life cycle, I believe, right now. So if that's the case, then I would hold off and on spraying that. Just let it continue its life cycle, and really focus on making sure you have good cultural practices throughout the rest of this growing season. Maybe apply some fertilizer this fall to try to fill in those areas.
All right, we have about a minute to go. Wedding veil spirea, many dead branches this year. What do I do? Every other year it's been green and full of flowers.
Yes, this probably, again, was a winter damage. So I would cut off anything that's dead. That wedding veil or bridal wreath spirea is quite hardy, and that can rejuvenate from the base again. It will take a while to completely come back. But, so I've just cut out what's dead.
Well, let's mention again, as we end the show, about that great website from the U of M and what you can find there.
Yes, extension.umn.edu. Click on Garden. You can find all the pests and diseases. What weed is this? What insect is this? Plants for all your yard and garden needs. We have a survey we're going to be putting out and asking our listeners, you, to talk about this show and how it has helped you. So extension.umn.edu.
Good deal. We'll see you next time. Thank you both. Thanks, Mary. Thanks, John.
Thanks
for your help.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.